Okay, good morning, everybody. It's great to see you all today. We are continuing our theme of the commissioned this morning. But before we just get into our ministry, which is going to be a little bit different, as you can see by the stools. So we've got a few different people coming to share with us this morning. But I'm just going to give you a bit of an update on the Bridge Life Centre. Some of you have got an email this week as well, trying to keep you updated. Well, with the progress that is going on, but we, for those of you that are maybe new to the church, recently joined us, I don't know what the Life Centre is. So about 17 years ago, we bought the building at the top of the car park that looks like an old car showroom. It was an old car showroom. And use it as our offices and for different activities as well. But a few years ago, we had the vision and the heart to transform that into the Bridge Life Centre, which is a centre for the children, young people and families of our communities. And that building is going to be used and is used for so many different sessions, activities, projects that are going to benefit and reach and transform the lives of the children, young people in our community in a powerful way. But we split this work, the building work, to transform that building into three phases. The first phase was completed a couple of years ago. So that was building an auditorium in there, which now houses where our older children are now this morning in the Bridge Kids program. It gets used for tots groups and other things throughout the week as well. So that's been well utilized already. The second phase was building some smaller breakout rooms in there, putting in a new floor in there to make space for our offices as well, and building lots of smaller rooms, a youth cafe, and other breakout rooms in there as well. And we got halfway through that work and then realised the outside of the building was in much need of some TLC, windows being broken, leaks getting in, and things like that. So then prioritising working on the outside of the building first before we complete the rest of the inside. And we're looking to sell a house that we own, which is just around the corner, to help finance that the outside of the work. So that's all in progress now. We're looking to sell a house at the moment, and we're just creating a couple of extra spaces in there so that everything that we currently use the house for, which is an office, a couple of meeting rooms and some storage, that we've got the space in the building there to remove everything from the house so it can be empty before we sell it. And the people buying it don't want one of our staff members to come along as part of the deal as well. So that's where we're up to. There's a couple of maybe pictures come up on the screen just to see some of the new spaces being created at the moment on top of the floor. If you look from the car park, you can actually see them through the windows on the top floor there. But that work is coming on nicely. As well, a couple of fundraising things we've done recently as well. So those of you that came down to watch the England games, massively appreciated. We raised £640 through that. And the Rise Dance Show, which gave all their proceeds, the profits from the show, towards the Life Centre as well. So they raised over £1,500 from the Rise Show as well. Just to give an indication, obviously the building work is going on all the time, and it's not that we're waiting for this building to be completed before we can use it. That even since Easter, so the past few months since Easter, we've had 109 different sessions ran from the Life Centre, and that has impacted people attending sessions, 3,473 moments of connection, times people have attended sessions or they've received Moses Basket donation, things like that, simply since Easter as well. So it's very much God is using the Life Centre now as we speak to impact the lives of people in our communities as well. So yeah, if you want to continue giving to the Life Centre, you can do that online, bridgeportal.com/give. And we always appreciate those that have doing and continue to pray into it as well, believing that God's going to continue to transform lives. Each of these 3,000 moments of connection that are powerful and impactful, people coming in from our communities as well that have never heard about what it means to be a follower of Jesus as well in new and powerful ways. Okay, so this morning, as we continue our commission theme, obviously Rhonda shared brilliantly last week about how God has used her to be a light in our world, that we're talking about the Great Commission. God asked us to go out to make disciples of all nations. So this morning we've got three different people are going to come up and share. So if you'd like to welcome up to the stage, we've got John Asiata, Andrew Williamson and Nardos Aliyu. So I'm just going to ask these guys a few different questions this morning and hopefully get a nice bit of a variety of how God has used them in and through their lives as well. So you've got the mic, Andy. I gave you the mic, so we'll start with you. Tell us a bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, what's brought you to the Andy Williamson we know today.
Okay.
Yeah, you're on. Good morning.
Morning.
I thought I was coming to blind date then when I came up the steps. So my name's Andy Williamson. This time 20 years ago, I was a partner in a top 100 law firm specialising in construction law and arbitration, which isn't as exciting as it sounds. And in January 2004, my second son, Daniel, was born. And I suppose a bit like Cookie's just been sharing then, when you hold your child in your arms, you kind of just evaluate your life. And I was just sitting there and I was actually thinking, where will I be in 20 years' time? And here I am. And I thought I could stay at the firm I was at and make loads and loads of money. And in 20 years' time, when I'm sitting on my yacht counting it, I would be thinking to myself, what did you do with your life? And so it took 9 months. And then I left the firm I was at and set up my own firm. And it's been a roller coaster ride ever since. But along the way, we've been involved in some of the high-profile Christian religious freedom cases, been in the Court of Appeal, Supreme Court, European Court of Justice. We've acted for clients all across the world, so I've got clients in China, India, across the Middle East, America. Acted for some of the wealthiest people in the world, and met royalty. And then, kind of as an aside, we set up a charity and built orphanages. And we built an orphanage in Uganda, just outside Kampala, in a place called Mitiana, which can accommodate about 300 children. And that's had its challenges in itself. And at the moment, we're also just supporting a children's project in a place called Brasov in Romania, working with Romani children. So there we go.
Wow, brilliant.
To come back to, I'll go one more question for you before we move on to Johnny. In that kind of moment where you kind of looked at your life and decided, thinking I need to maybe make a bit of a change in the direction of life's heading, how much of that was kind of God speaking to you in a light bulb moment, or was this kind of you and your own relationship with God, you kind of thinking, this is my choice? How much was it like obedience to God as a direct word, or how much was it like, I need to make a choice here? Yeah. And what's going on?
Yeah, so was it God or was it indigestion? I became a Christian when I was about 5 years old. It's my earliest childhood memory of becoming a Christian. And when I was about 7 or 8, I felt God laying my heart to become a lawyer. And I've had a clear understanding that I was going to be a lawyer from that age, which, because at that age, you want to be my brother wanted to be an ice cream van salesman at that age, until he was a bit worried about how he would get in and out of the van. So then he stopped wanting to do it. But I wanted to be a lawyer from that age. And when I was about 12 years old, I preached for the first time at a church in Radcliffe, Close Methodist Church in Radcliffe. And this little old lady, I say little old lady, she's probably about as old as I am now, but she came up to me at the end and she said, "You'll make a great vicar." And this really bothered me because I didn't want to be a vicar, I wanted to be a lawyer. So the next day I was coming home from school, sitting on the bus, looking out across Bury Bridge, and I had a very insignificant moment which has stuck with me, for 40 plus years. Because I just said to God, "Look, God, I don't want to be a vicar. I want to be a lawyer. But if you want me to be a vicar, I'll be a vicar." And what I'd done in that moment is just lay down my own desires, my own ambitions, and said, "Okay, God, over to you." Yeah. And as I look back over my life from then, the devil tried to snuff out that purpose in my life on so many times. And it started when I was at school nobody in my family had ever gone to university before, let alone become something like a lawyer. But when I was at school, I went to the teacher and said, he said, "What do you want to be?" And I said, "I want to be a lawyer." And he said, "Well, I wouldn't want to spend all my life divorcing people." And I haven't divorced anybody yet, actually, so right in that. And then when we came to do the university forms and send those off, "What do you want to do?" I said, "I want to be a lawyer." "Well, you're not clever enough to be a lawyer." So I said, "Well, I want to be a lawyer. So they said, well, you're not clever enough to go to university and be a lawyer. You'll have to go to poly, which, not wanting to offend people in the room, but in those days, poly was like a second-tier university. I know we're not supposed to say that anymore, are we? So I said, fine, I'll go to poly then. So I filled the forms out to go to poly, and then I did my box, and I got really good results. And then they said, well, you should go to Cambridge. And I said, well, I was thick 2 minutes ago, and now you wanted me to go to Cambridge. But they said, but you're not clever enough to do law at Cambridge, so what you'll do is we'll put you in for geography, which was bizarre, because I hadn't even done geography A-level. I wasn't even doing it. And I said, well, I want to be a lawyer. And they said, well, we'll put you in for geography, and then when you get there, you can change, which if anybody's got any idea of how universities work, that's the worst advice you can give to anybody. And I said, no, I want to be a lawyer. So I went to Cambridge. I had an interview at Cambridge, which I failed, probably because I had no coaching in what I was supposed to be answering the questions. I came back. I did my finals, my A-levels, did even better than my mocks. And then the teacher said, well, take a year out and go to Cambridge next year. And I said, look, I want to be a lawyer. I don't care where I go. I'll go to poly, I'll go wherever. I'm just going to become a lawyer. And, you know, there's not enough time for me to tell you the ways that the devil's tried to snuff that out since then. But what I found myself when I was, this time 20 years ago, I found myself at the pinnacle of what I was supposed to be achieving, and realised this isn't the vision that God put in my heart. This isn't what I was living out, wasn't what I wanted to be. And so that's what caused the unrest and the unease in my life, even to the point where I thought, maybe I shouldn't be a lawyer because this isn't it. And even now, I think I'm moving towards what God wants me to do, but I don't think I'm there yet.
Yeah, very good.
Brilliant.
Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, can pass it on now.
No, Andy, I absolutely love that. That determination and that unwillingness to be wavered or taken off course of where you know that God has called you to be. John, tell us a bit about yourself. What's brought you to the northwest of England today?
Hi, everyone. My name is Atalani John Selesele Asiata, but you can just call me John, just nice and short. I'm born and raised in Sydney. Grew up in Western Sydney, family of three. One sibling, one brother, one sister, mum and dad. Very big family overall. I love my sport. I'm an athlete. I play for Lee Leopards here in the UK. I did 8 years in the NRL over in Australia. And for me, the way I ended up here probably wasn't the way I wanted it to be. I had dreams to always come here to sort of experience the UK, bring my family over. But with the circumstance of COVID, I sort of lost my contract in 2021. And I thought I wasn't going to play rugby league again because COVID was very strict. Knowing that I couldn't play in my own country, I was like, how am I supposed to go over to the UK and play? So, at that stage, I sort of lost a bit of faith, not in God, but in myself, in what's next for me, because I didn't plan for it to end that early. So, God works in miraculous ways, and, you know, sometimes you can't see what he has planned for you, and you just got to fully trust and believe in him. And I've been here now going on to 3 years. It's probably been the best 2.5 years of my rugby league career. This is year 11, and I've just signed another 3-year contract, which I didn't think I was going to be in the UK for another 3 years, but I'm here for another 3 years, and, you know, I've just been blessed to be able to bring my family, wife and kids to experience this side of the world.
What's been like the highlight of your kind of rugby career so far? What would you say is that been?
In 2015, would have been my second year in professional rugby league. We went 0-3 in the beginning of the year. Everyone sort of wrote us off and said they weren't going to make the finals. We ended up winning the competition that year. The last probably, we were losing by a try. Last probably 10 seconds, we thought it was done. And my dad always tells me the story that he was standing next to my girlfriend at the time, which is now my wife. My wife was like, "Oh, they're going to lose, they're going to lose. Like, there's only 10 seconds left." And my dad goes, turns to her and says, "Darling, don't worry, God's got them." Within that 10 seconds, we scored in the corner. We ended up winning the game. And that's probably the highlight of my career, because it's, as a young, you know, a young junior coming into professional rugby league, it's very difficult to get to the top. It's very difficult to win a competition. And for me to be in my second year, I was blessed to be in one of the best teams. Played with some of the players that I looked up to when I was young. And I think for me to experience that, a lot of people go 10, 12, 13 years and never make it to the final. So for me, it's a blessing.
Brilliant.
Thanks, John. And Nardos, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hello, my name is Nardos. I don't think I've got anything as interesting to put up, but I'm a student. I'm going into year 11 this year, and I'm at Cannon Slade right now, which is a Christian school. It's not too far. I was born into a Christian family, so all my life I've pretty much got to, I've known of God, but I only recently, like I say recently, it was a couple of years ago, devoted myself to actually living out a dedicated life. Yeah, I've got three little brothers, so a very big family at home, and yeah, that's all.
Do y'all get on well with your brothers, or how would you describe your brothers in one word?
I love them all, but they're a lot.
That says it all, Nardos. Yeah. Excellent. No, yeah. Nardos' brothers were on kids' camp. They were brilliant. Brilliant there. Lots of fun and energy. Great to be around. Okay. If you want to come back to Andy then, just next question. I was looking at the Great Commission, so which is to go and make disciples of all nations. Thinking specifically about your area of work or what you do, how do you see that you can outwork that or have outworked that in what you've been able to do and the opportunities you've had?
I think the first point I just want to make about the Great Commission is that when we have this discussion, it can leave us feeling sometimes quite inadequate in our response to it. When I was a teenager in church, we had a guy that came and he spoke about the sower. And he banged on about the fact that, you know, you should be converting 20, 40, 60, 100 people. And so you go away feeling quite inadequate and actually under judgmental, you know, judgment by it. And I know that's not the intention of this series that we're putting on. It's to encourage people to be able to share the faith. But sometimes you'll hear people and they'll say that the purpose of our lives as Christians is to go and make other people Christians, you know, to go and tell other people about God. And we have got a great commission, which is to do that, but that's not our purpose. You know, when God made God created the Garden of Eden, he created, it was perfect. There was no sin. Nobody needed saving. Nobody needed to tithe. You know, nobody needed to go on mission anywhere or anything like that. All that God created Adam for was to be in relationship with God. And that's fundamentally what he wants from each of us. He just wants us to be in relationship with God. And when we do that, then he can begin to use us, when we humble ourselves and come to that point where we're just in relationship with him. I spent about 10 years doing Scripture Union Beach missions. I've only got all these experiences because I'm so old. That's the only reason. But I spent about 10 years doing Scripture Union Beach missions. And I was pretty good at it. And I used to, you know, we used to go around and do all kinds of very creative things to try to spread the gospel and very bold out on the streets and doing street evangelism and so on. And about toward to the end of this period, we went to a group of us went on a retreat to a monastery in France called Taizé. And so when we went, I thought it was going to be really nice and warm because it was in France. It was absolutely freezing because it was up the side of a hill. So the only warm place in the whole monastery was the church. And so I ended up sitting in this church for about 15, 16 hours a day just to keep warm. So whilst I'd gone on retreat, I hadn't gone to spend that much time with God. God kind of had to do something about it. And while I was in this church, I saw God. or what I've, you know, later come to realise was the glory of God, because it's, the Bible says we've not seen God and no man's seen God and lived. And all I can describe it as was this, it was just total white light, and it was just pulsing this warmth and this heat. It wasn't burning, it was just a warmth and a heat, and it was just a peaceness and a contentment that was just washing over me in waves. And at the time, I had a burning question on my mind, which was immediately answered, because the question that I had is, was, when we get to heaven, will we get bored? Which I'm sure people have actually thought that, because probably too scared to admit it. But I had this, I was kind of, well, we're going to be just worshipping God for eternity. And I'd been in some of the places I'd been at that point as a young man didn't really, well, the worship wasn't as good as it is here. And I was kind of thinking, well, we're just going to get bored going on and on like this. And it immediately answered that question, because I had no idea how long I sat there for. I could have sat there for a second, a minute, an hour, a day, a week. I could have sat there forever. I just knew that I never wanted to leave. And and then God put another question in my heart, which is probably the question he wanted to ask. You know, so it's like when we have questions for God, we come up with these stupid ones, like, are we going to get bored in heaven? But God gave me another question that dropped into my heart, which, and I just said to God, God, why don't you reveal like yourself like this to everyone, and then everybody would believe? And then as I asked this, I suddenly saw all of the things that I was doing for God to try to work out and share my faith and try to, you know, convert people and do these things. And they just burnt up in front of this, what I was looking at, like chaff. And of course, what God was saying is, what I was looking at is inside of me. God's inside of me. And if you're a Christian today, God's inside of you. And God doesn't want us to come up with any kind of clever ways about sharing the gospel and this kind of thing. He just wants us to get out of the way so that people can see us in him. And if we get time later on, maybe we'll mention this. But I think at the moment, the world that we're living in is, there's so much anger, and we're so polarised in what we are. And what we need to understand is, it's not about us winning an argument with somebody. It's just about us showing people who God is, and then let God work it out for himself.
Very good, yeah. Excellent. John, how does the rugby world look like for you, and do you live in as a follower of Jesus in that kind of arena?
Yeah, I think my first year in professional rugby league, I come in as a young kid, and the drinking culture, the partying culture was very big where I started. Boys sort of, every weekend, boys used to go out all the time, and I never used to go. And the boys were starting to wonder, like, why don't you come out with the boys? So I started to go with them. So I started going. I didn't drink. So I ended up being their taxi driver. So every time they go out, I used to just go there, make sure they're okay, bring them home. So by the end of that year, they used to call me Father John, because they knew I was a strong believer. They knew I stay away from all that stuff. And they used to call me Father John because I looked after them, take them home, make sure they get home safely. And I still do that to now, because right now, in my 11th year of my career, I see myself more of a leader rather than a rookie coming through. So my testimony, my experiences, my challenges that I've faced is now, for me, is to share to those young kids coming through. So for me, right now, everything that I do is to coach, is to help encourage young kids, you know, be who they are. And for me, it's all about belief, faith, and staying true to who you are. Boys see me when I, like this year, for instance, I've had a pretty challenging year. I've been injured majority of it. I've only been back for the last three games, and it's been tough sitting on the sidelines watching your team, and we've struggled a little bit. But boys sort of ask me the question, why are you so calm during this time when you're injured and nothing's going right? I came back for one game, I did my hamstring again. And I said to the boys, I said, the reason why I'm calm is because I have peace. I'm in peace in that everything happens for a reason. No matter if it's good or no matter whether it's bad, it's the lessons that we learn throughout that time. And I've got a lot of young kids now asking me the question, you know, why is your belief so strong? How did you get there? And, you know, why does God do these things to us, that, you know, why we get injured and when things are not going right. And I said to them, it's like, it's a test. To me, I believe that, you know, God puts us through some challenges, but all these challenges that we face, we can handle. God would never put you through something that you cannot handle. But it's about being surrounded by the right people, being surrounded and encouraged by the right people to take that step forward, to trust and to believe that, you know, no matter what happens, I can get to the other side. And for me, it's about being a role model. It's about showing those boys that there's hope. And, you know, whatever you're struggling with, we're all going through the same thing. But it's about, you know, being around the right people to help you go through those tough times.
Okay, Naros, so being at school, how have you been able to kind of outwork your faith at school?
Yeah, so I changed schools in year seven, and at the beginning of year eight, I came to Cannon Slade. It was really difficult trying to settle into a new school with them, knowing that you have a faith now and you're trying to devote yourself to something. So Bridge Youth was where I devoted myself for the first time. There was a Friday night, we prayed a prayer that just said, like, we're going to give ourselves to God and we're going to surrender everything we had. So since then, walking into school always felt like it was just me and God versus whatever the day was going to bring. But I was invited to a chaplaincy worship session on a Thursday by one of our school chaplaincy leaders. And from then on, when I went to that place, I just, like, I felt that comforting reminder that God is actually present in my school, and he's present in the people around me. Even if they didn't know it, I was able to see it. And from then on, I was really happy that there was a place like that where I could go and I could just be reminded that it's not me and God versus the day, because God's actually all around us. Yeah, so from then I really, like, I dedicated myself to chaplaincy worship. I joined in as much as I could with the band. We performed at events like around school, such like Founders Days, when we were going in and out for different types of things. And, like, I invited as many people as I could that I met, even if they weren't really open to knowing about the faith, because once you get a sense of, like, God's goodness, I feel like you want everybody around you to just, you want to push them to feel that same thing. It feels like too good to, like, keep to yourself. So yeah, I stay dedicated to worship. It is one of my, like, favorite things to do anyway, so that did help a lot. But yeah, that's how I...
Excellent. Okay. And then just kind of last question. So is there anything you've not said that you really want to say? Work it into this one. But last question, think about, obviously, the world we live in, like Andy, you mentioned a bit about, that can be very polarised, and people have got opinions on everything. What do you kind of see are the main challenges in that for maybe you, maybe thinking specifically in general, but maybe specifically with kind of your area of what you do, and how do you kind of, or how do you respond to that?
I think, I mean, we have become very polarised, and everybody is just angry with everybody else about everything at the moment. You don't have to go on the phone in, you know, and sit there and see how angry everybody gets, just about everything. And even within church, you know, we've got difference of opinions within church, and what we find is that everybody believes that God's on their side, you know, and that they're obviously, people believe they're right because it's the opinions that they hold, but then they believe that God's on their side as well. And there's a verse I always go back to in Joshua, when they're just about to go and take Jericho, and Joshua sees this guy stood afar off, and he's got a sword drawn, and Joshua goes over to this man, and later in the chapter it says that the man told Joshua to take his shoes off because the place where he was standing was holy ground. And so many commentators will say that that man was Jesus, because the angels and other men wouldn't have told somebody else to take their shoes off in front of him, and it wouldn't have been holy ground. And Joshua asks a question to this man. He says to him, quite reasonably, when they're about to go out to battle and he sees a bloke with a big sword, he says, "Are you on our side? Are you on the side of our enemies?" And the man replies and he says, "Neither." but as the commander of the armies of the living God, I am come. And the key thing for us is, it's not about getting God on our side, it's about making sure that we're on God's side. Okay, and we all need to very often just stop and just wait in the presence of God and allow him to deal with that. Just, I suppose, challenges in my own life and opportunities. I suppose one of the biggest downsides of my job is that nobody ever rings me up with good news. I only ever get people ringing me up with bad news. I've got one client I've acted for about 20 years, and every time he rings me, we have a chat, and then I says, right, what's the bad news that you're ringing me for? But the good point of my job is that nobody ever rings me with good news. They only ever ring me when they've got bad news. And it's a great blessing to be able to speak into people's lives at that time. And by doing so, you build a relationship with people that they actually can begin to trust you, and you can begin to speak into your life. So I've got clients from all walks of life, all different religions, and you're able just to share with them something and see where it goes.
Anything from that's kind of a specific challenge, or maybe the moving around from country to country, how you found that as part of your journey of faith as well?
No, I think moving from Australia to here, it's actually strengthened my faith, not just me, but my wife. God's always been the centre of everything that we do, and being away from family is probably the biggest challenge. And, you know, having this church family as well, but also just having that strong connection with God keeps us safe, and we just continue to trust him in everything that we do. But with the rugby league world, for me personally, I don't see many challenges anymore. What I find is for me to just continue to grow and to understand who I am, and that I'm able to plant seeds in people's hearts. Like every now and then I'll drop messages to my whole team group. Some boys will reply, some boys won't. But the fact that I've shared a message, shared some good news or something good that's happened to me through my faith, just sort of gives that little itch to some of the boys about, you know, maybe John, you know, maybe there is a God that, you know, that God that John believes in that can help us, because a lot of boys face a lot of different challenges. Some boys don't tend to open up because they're very scared, but I tend to reach out all the time, and for me it's always about reaching out and making sure that I can help where I can, and just making sure that I continue to just plant the seeds within my group. So right now we've got a prayer group, and it's growing, which is good, and it's awesome. And as you see around the league, there's a lot more boys now doing prayers on field, in the sheds, and having little prayer groups. So, what we do, everyone sees, because it's on TV, and young kids get to see it as well. So the way we live our life, you know, people see your every move. And for me, I've got to make sure that I stay true to who I am, continue to share the word, and just continue to have faith.
I think that us, you know, I used to work in high school. I know how tough an environment it can be at all different times. Yeah, what are the kind of main challenges that you face being in high school, and how do you overcome them?
I would say overall, just like, it's like the trend setting and all the fear of missing out that you'd have as a Christian, because we're told to stay away from certain things, of course, like that we know God doesn't want us to do and wouldn't please him. So just hearing things like, when you're around certain people, they'll be making jokes that you wouldn't laugh at as a Christian. For example, you could say things and joke about like situations that are actually, because we might be more mature in our faith, we know like are deeper than people can sometimes put out to be. So yeah, that's one of the main things, being able to, like, stick to your faith. And, like, you also get a really, I would say one of the hardest things for me has been the pressure that I've faced. I'm really transparent about my faith when I do go into school, so I'm willing to talk about God, I'm willing to talk to people and, like, try to educate them on what I know. But I also have to admit sometimes that I don't have the answers to everything. Even though some things I want to be able to answer, I can admit that I don't know it all yet, and we probably won't till the end of it. So just in those type of situations, being able to admit you're not perfect, and being a Christian isn't being perfect. It's accepting that a perfect God does love you. And just being able to accept that love is one of the hardest things that you do, because you also give it out. Like, God treats us so much better than we deserve to be treated. So I always have to go into school reminding myself, like, treat these people how you want to be treated and how you've been treated, even though you've not always been worthy of it. So yeah, the pressures of making sure to, like, stick to what you say and practice what you preach.
Thank you so much, guys. You guys can take your seats. Let's give them a big round of applause as these guys head off stage. Yeah, the band are coming up if you'd like to stand. We're going to finish with a time of worship now, but just recognising that as these guys have shared, that we've all got a unique opportunity, haven't we? Yeah. Whatever our world looks like, whatever our family, our neighbourhood, our place of work or our home life, whatever that looks like, we each have unique opportunity to be light, to be the people that God has called us to be through our actions, through our words and in that. And just hopefully this morning you've been encouraged that we can all do something, whether it doesn't mean that you need to go above and beyond what you feel you can, but recognising being the person that God has called you to be, being obedient to him in that, following his words, will live out our great commission for us to be a light in our world, to see others come to know God as well. Thanks, guys. Thank you.